to spend a bit more time in the Old Testament. So over the coming weeks, we're going to be looking at the life of Joseph. And I'm sure many of you know different things about the life of Joseph. It's an amazing character. I mean, you've got plays, Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, or whatever it's called. And, you know, you've got films about Joseph. And, you know, Joseph is thought of, in some respects, like a type of Christ. You know, when he becomes prime minister, you know, he delivers the Jews out of famine. But you think, you know, how does he arrive there? And the story of how he arrives is absolutely fascinating. So I'd like you to turn in your Bibles now. We're looking at Genesis 37. We will be getting some NIV Bibles, okay? Because I'm not a fan of the Good News, but it's more of a paraphrase. It's okay, but I prefer you to follow a more literal translation. So we've got a few kind donations towards NIV Bibles. So if anyone else would like to make a donation, at the moment, I think we can afford maybe about 20. So we'll be able to use them. But also, let me encourage you, make an investment. Go to the Christian bookshop in St. John's Church. And if you can afford it, get yourself a really nice NIV Bible. Okay, Genesis chapter 37. We're going to read from verses 1 to 11. It starts, Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. Genesis 37, verse 1. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he'd been born to him in his old age. And he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. His brothers were jealous, but his father kept the matter in mind. You know, centuries and, well, certainly thousands of years ago, dreams were very important. They took on real significance, and families would listen to dreams. And in other religions, and certainly in Egypt, you had people, you know, who would interpret dreams. And the Bible says that sometimes God speaks to us in dreams and visions. Now, hopefully you can distinguish between too much cheese and a late night and watching something on television and the voice of the Lord. But even Jacob, who was called Israel, Joseph's dad, knew that there was something about Joseph's dream that was significant. There was something significant about his dream. Now, when you read stories in the Bible, sometimes they can take on, you know how we watch television, we watch TV episodes and you watch films and you watch these Hollywood actors, and sometimes it can feel like the people aren't real. We take on so much fiction, fiction, if you can imagine, if you had a record of how many hours of your life that you've spent watching television, wouldn't that be interesting? Huh? and how many hours of that television that you watch was fiction and storytelling and drama. So we're bombarded with stories. We're bombarded, you know, from a young age, we're attracted to stories. But God uses stories as a method of teaching us. God uses storytelling, even in the role of the family, to help us to grow and to learn about making real choices. But Joseph was very much a real man, and this story is a very much a real wind-up, isn't it? You know, sometimes, you know, Freddie will tell on Reuben, and Reuben will tell on Freddie, and sometimes you can smell a rat, and you know that something's not quite right. Sometimes you can just look at one of your children and go, I know that one's telling the truth, and the other one's trying to dodge it. But sometimes, I mean, our boys are good, we don't really have those problems, but I would imagine in a lot of family situations, you can have real envy. You can have envy. Someone can be envious. You know, it'd be like Freddie being envious of Reuben's ability playing the piano and Reuben being envious of Freddie's ability to play football and whatnot. But this goes on more than that, because Joseph was not the firstborn. And the privilege in Jewish culture always went to the firstborn son, who was Reuben, actually. Yeah? His name Reuben, it means behold a son. He was the firstborn of Jacob. Joseph was actually the lastborn. So if you're talking about a pecking order, Joseph should have been right at the back of the queue in terms of his father's focus. I'm going to explain to you in a minute why Joseph was cherished by Jacob. I'm going to explain to you why when we look at the story of Jacob's wives. You remember Leah? And we're going to look at that. It's really, really interesting. So God produced the stories and characters of the Bible thousands of years ago in what I call his Far Eastern studios. Yeah? Didn't have Hollywood then. We had the Far East. You know. But God uses storytelling. Yeah? History is, if you break it up, his story. He uses these things to teach us. What I like about the scripture is that it really shares the weaknesses as well. You do get a sense in which Joseph is boasting. I mean, he's not the smartest cookie, is he? He might be blessed. He might be part of God's divine plan. But he really doesn't go about things particularly well. I mean, he should already know that his brothers hate him. Yeah? They haven't got a kind word to say about him. So him turning up and saying, hey, guess what? It's just, you can imagine, talk about stirring the pot. You can imagine them saying, you know, we've got no time for him, we can't stand him, to someone provoking you in your face. Now, I would imagine in a situation where you're falling out with someone, and I know that you've never fallen out with anyone in your lives, have you? But I would imagine if you're falling out with someone, it's difficult. But if they come up to your face and provoke you, that's really difficult. I mean, if you lived in Glasgow, it'd be called the Glasgow Kiss, wouldn't it? See you, Jimmy. But the brothers don't do that. But what they do is they build up such a huge resentment and such hatred. They're building it up and building it up. And do you know what's like when you've got a pack of wolves together and they feed off of each other? So it's one thing having a problem of envy and animosity. But if you're in a group of people and they're all stirring the pot, it gets really bad. It gets really bad. God uses very imperfect people because we see something of our own mistakes and our own flaws in our own lives. Think about James chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. It says, Elijah the prophet was a man just like us. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it didn't rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again he prayed and the heavens gave rain and the earth produced its crops. Time and time again, the Bible is trying to show you that although there are people that are chosen as vessels of the Lord, they really do have flaws. You've only got to look at David. Abraham was a liar. Look what he did with his wife. Gave her over to a king and said, she's my sister, because he didn't want to be murdered. David was an adulterer and put Bathsheba's husband on the front line so that he would be murdered. Jacob was a coward Rahab had been a prostitute. Peter denied Christ. Of course, we all know about Adam and Eve. You know, so it's interesting. From a book that's about faith, it doesn't always paint picture in the most angelic, like, you know, religion likes to paint icons of people. You know, you've got the Virgin Mary, but, you know, she's not just a blessed woman who was chosen by God, but now she's sinless, even though the Bible doesn't teach that. You know, you've got pictures of saints with halos around their head and wearing long cassocks or whatever. And, you know, it's almost like, oh, well, they're different to us. They're holy men or they're holy women. But these were ordinary people who made good choices and bad choices as well. You and I must never pretend to be what we are not. But we shouldn't be apathetic either. Some people, and certainly as you get older, some people say, well, that's how I am. If you don't like it, you can lump it. Yeah? Or I've lived on this earth for enough years to know, you can't tell me. You know, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. If we're going to live forever, we're all babes. How about that? Have you ever thought of yourself as a babe this morning? Call yourself a babe. Say, Eileen, I'm a babe. We're all babes if, in the context of eternity, we're still learning. Do you remember the film The Truman Show with Jim Carrey? It's a really good, fascinating film. I've written some notes about this. If you remember, the central character of the show was acted by Jim Carrey. You remember the comedian Jim Carrey? He did a film called Liar Liar and other things. He's a very funny guy. When Solana and I went to Hollywood in 2006, we worked on a film project. We actually stayed next door to one of Jim Carrey's houses, which was a bit surreal. At the end of the road was a great big film studio. It's funny, you know, that it's not like you're elevated to a certain position, but just for that season, you know, Solana and I, we worked on an Oscar-nominated film. I mean, how surreal was that? You know, we had no background in that, but I can tell you the story about that one day. That was an amazing experience. But this film, The Truman Show, is really interesting because the Truman character was led to believe that the world and everything around him was real and everybody was perfectly happy. So if you haven't seen the film, I really recommend it. It's a really interesting film. Basically, the world that Truman lived in was a giant TV set. And he didn't know it. He was born into that world. He didn't know any different. And everyone, you know, family and neighbours and, you know, the people that he'd grown up with, they were all actors. They were all actors. But as time went on and he started to question things, he started to smell a rat. He started to think, hang on a minute. Things aren't all that they seem. This doesn't seem to be like a real world. It doesn't seem to be a real reality. People were trying to imitate good behavior, but they were lacking any integrity, to be honest, with young Truman. When we look at our world today, it is not how God intended it to be. It's not how God intended it to be. There are pockets of it that work well, and community and different things, but there are things that are really broken down. Parts of our community are broken down. Parts of our town are broken. Many families are broken. You know, obviously, you know, Solana works in primary school and in pastoral work. Gainer, you'll know as well from working in school. You pick up so many sad stories, you know, whether it's, you know, football teams and you hear of, you know, certain lads won't be there now because their parents are divorcing. And it's just heartbreaking when you see that things are breaking down. Joseph certainly didn't live in a perfect family, did he? I wonder if they actually just paid lip service to Joseph, his brothers. I wonder if they were a bit, oh, how are you, Joseph? God, can't stand him. You know, I wonder what kind of characters they were. Or did they just ignore him? Did they say, we want nothing to do with him? Or did they put a show on when their dad was around? Did they behave a certain way, but inside in their heart, they were completely different? I wonder. Before we look at Joseph's life, let's recap. Joseph's family was a mixture of his daddy Jacob's offspring from four women. From four different women. These women who is beloved, was his wife Rachel and her sister Leah. Leah is the one that Jacob didn't particularly want, if you remember the story. But she came as a bonus in a package deal. Laban said, you can work for 7 years and you can choose one of my daughters as a bride. But Jacob was tricked and he ended up choosing Leah, which he was gutted about because he loved Rachel. And Laban said, you can work another 7 years if you want Rachel. It gives you a bit of a clue. I've just given you a hint. Why would Jacob prefer Joseph? Was Joseph Rachel's child? Yes. Yeah? Imagine having a sweetheart. Yeah? Someone that you adored and loved, and you imagine you lived, you know, 1,000 years ago and you were tricked into a marriage and you married the wrong one. Oh dear. Now you're going to try and be honourable and you're going to try and, you know, but if your heart is elsewhere, that would be very difficult. Joseph was Rachel's child. Jacob eventually married Rachel on the condition that he worked for a further 7 years for Laban. And there were two servants or concubines, Zilpah, Leah's maid, and Bilhah, Rachel's maid. Now, Reuben was Jacob's firstborn, and Joseph was his 11th born, and the child of his true love, Rachel. So Jacob's wish that it was Joseph who would receive the birthright and the mantle of spiritual leadership is maybe not so surprising, actually. It's not the common thing to give the youngest the blessing, the birthright. You know, this garment that he made for him was to elevate him in a position where none of his other brothers had a jacket like that. You can be sure of that. It's in a way a bit romantic, this story. It's Jacob loved Rachel so much that he worked another 7 years. He didn't say, do you know what, I can't bear working for this bloke. He's already stitched me up. I'll just have to settle with my losses and off we go. He loved Rachel that much that he worked another 7 years. Now, I can imagine that was very difficult for the other wife. What do you think about that? Yeah? It's sad. It is sad, actually. I would imagine the other wife probably harboured certain ill feelings towards Rachel. And then you've got the concubines or the porcupines or whatever you call them involved as well. So you've got a bit of a family feud going on here. I think as time goes on, you can just imagine that they probably didn't get on with each other very well. Probably good idea that there were shepherds and sheep, because they could just say, right, you go over and you take care of that lot and you stay out of the way and you do that. Rachel, you come and look after this. Leah, you know, and you could just imagine that Jacob's probably, oh, what have I done? But you know what? Jacob couldn't help but show his affection to Joseph. He couldn't help but to make him a special coat. He couldn't help but decorate his son in a way, because he was the cherished offspring of his true love. That must be really hard. I can't imagine being in a loveless marriage. That must be hard enough. So now we're beginning to wonder how bad it must have been. So we go back to verse 1 and verse 2, and we find out, we're just going to look at these quickly. Joseph brings a bad account. It says in verse 2, the account of Jacob, Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report. Now, whether he was telling tales or telling the truth, we don't quite know. But I can imagine Joseph was probably a bit of a goody-two-shoes. He would have known that his father's affection was upon him. And he didn't really go about things the right way, did he? So Joseph's 17. He's a young shepherd, so we know his profession. His partners, he was partners in, I guess, what you'd be a shepherding enterprise, as well as his brothers and half-brothers. So Joseph, from the beginning, is a bit of a grass. He might be loyal to his daddy, but the way he goes about things is not good. But Joseph was going to be different. You see, his father trusted him to send Joseph out to go and check on his older brothers. It's quite an unusual thing. Normally, you'd send out the older ones to go and check on the younger ones and see how they're going to behave. We're having AstroTurf fitted this week, hopefully. It's rained, so we've had to pause it. But Freddie's got this coaching video to do in the summer, and they're going to use that square of the garden. But what I've done is I've said to Reuben, I'm going to give you the coaching video on the iPad or whatever it is, and I want you to do it with Freddie, so you can be the boss. You're the older brother. But I don't want you to exasperate him. I don't want you to wind him up. I don't want you to be bossy. Now, good luck with that. But there's a sense in which an older brother should be wiser, and he should maybe rejoice in that opportunity to be like big brother. And I notice with Reuben sometimes, he loves to be big brother to Freddie, and that's really sweet when you see him, you know. And then Reuben talks about things, and you could tell he's trying to be grown up, you know. And Reuben's finished year six now. He's just finished primary school, so he's going to St. Mary's School, secondary school, in September. And I thought, wow, he's going to secondary school now. He's getting older. So I thought, I better buy him a watch. He needs to know what time of day it is. That's a start. But I thought to myself, I need to let go of the leash a little bit. Reuben's got to learn. So even things like crossing the road, I know it sounds ridiculous, but when they're in primary school, they follow you everywhere. You cross the road, you hold your hand with them. All of a sudden, he's getting to that age now where maybe he doesn't want his dad to walk him right to the entrance holding his hand, as you can imagine. In fact, Reuben has already made it clear, Dad, you can just drop me off, you know, just, you don't have to walk me to the door. And he said something sweet. Reuben said, you know, Dad, when I go to secondary school, it's going to be a mad rush to go from St. Mary's to then St. Bernadette's pick Freddie up. He said, can I pick Freddie up? You know, can I go in and get him, you know? And you could just see that he just wants to step up a bit and be the older brother. But with Joseph, there isn't any of this type of relationship at all. In fact, the father has basically put the son in a position where he's already exercising the authority that the older ones should really be having. Joseph was certainly different, but maybe Jacob's not doing things right. I don't know. But God uses all things to work out his plan of salvation. That's the key thing here. Verse 3 says that Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he'd been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. Well, the kids would have already seen the favoritism, but to just decorate him in his presence would have just been an absolute wind-up. You read in this story that they actually go about 50 miles away. All the older brothers have just gone and done one. You know, they're not on their local patch. They've really moved a long way away. It's kind of like, you know what, let's just get away from that house. Let's get away from Joseph. We've had enough of Joseph. Jacob hadn't learned that parental favoritism is a deadly disease. A deadly disease. This garment that was made of many colours makes me think of the different types of garments that were used in the priesthood, ornately decorated, you know, to picture anointing and that special relationship with God. And I'm sure that the garment that Joseph had also had religious significance. It's not just, you know, here's the latest Hugo Boss jacket or, you know, Fred Perry sweatshirt or whatever. No, there's religious significance to this. You are anointed because you are my first choice. You're not the firstborn, but my first choice. That must have been very hard for the brothers. So at this point, we're not really condemning the brothers. That comes later. We'll have to look at that another time when they basically see him and they think, do you know what? We just had enough of him. Let's kill him. We'll make it look like there's been a wild animal. Tear him up. And Reuben is the one who steps in, the true firstborn, and he says, no, I don't think we should do that. He wanted to spare his life. Let's throw him down that hole. I mean, it's not much of an improvement. But maybe you don't know what Reuben was going to do. Maybe Reuben would have gone back, or I don't know. But he's kind of, he doesn't want his brother's blood on his hands. And then the brothers, and this is obviously for another sermon, but the brothers see these traders going by, and they think, do you know what, let's just sell him. I mean, it's getting worse, isn't it? Not only can we not stand him, we were going to kill him. He should be lucky we haven't. We've thrown him down a hole. He should be lucky that we're not going to leave him there. Let's just sell him to these traders. He can be a slave. As ruthless as that. And then they take one of an item of Jacob's clothing. I think it's the jacket. It's covered in blood, animal blood. They take it back to the father and say, got some bad news, Dad. got some bad news. Your beloved Joseph, no, I'm sure they weren't doing that, but your first choice son has perished. What goes on in Egypt is absolutely fascinating. What happens to Joseph's life is so, so interesting. It's like Joseph becomes a man. He becomes a man. In his early years, Joseph shows great promise. He's got potential. He's got that promise of God's calling on his life because he's had these dreams. God's shown him there's a time in the future where these things are going to happen. I'm going to elevate you. But he's not going to elevate Joseph because Joseph's so special. He's going to elevate Joseph because the nation of Israel needs to be saved through a famine. And Joseph, if you know the story, ends up becoming the prime minister of Egypt. Now that's quite some promotion, isn't it? Out of a hole into a palace. But all that stuff is on page 42, and I'm on page 2 now, so forget that. We're just going to move on a bit. Verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, could not speak a kind word to him. They couldn't speak a kind word to him, so they had nothing good to say to him. And I'm sure Joseph, being imperfect, also took on that resentment as well. Why do you hate me so? Why are you always having a go at me? Why do you never say kind things to me? Well, that should be obvious. Look at your jacket. So Joseph here would have some resentment as well. And I'm sure, you know, a little bit of that goes into Joseph's spirit, into his heart. So when he goes back to his dad and says, hey, they're messing about again. They're all on a jolly. There's none without guilt in this situation, none, including Jacob. And then we move on verses 5, 6, 7 and 8 about the dream. We won't discuss that because obviously we've talked about it. But his brothers said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And it says, they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he said. So things have reached absolute fever pitch of hatred. It begins with envy, then they resent him, but then full hatred is born. You know, the Bible talks about the seven deadly sins. Actually, there are lots of sins that lead up to the big ones. So Jesus said, if you lust in your heart, you've already committed adultery. Everybody thinks of the big sin. If you commit adultery in marriage and, you know, you've had a physical relationship, you've left your wife or your husband or whatever, that's clearly adultery. And some people say, well, I've never done that. But Jesus said, actually, in your heart, if you've already lusted, it's already begun. What are you going to do with that root? One thing we've had to do, I'll bring it to a close, it's 5 to 12, and I know you like to finish dead on 12, is weeding. When Solana told me 10 o'clock at night or a bit earlier, Simon, we've got to move all of the bins with all the compost and everything because the AstroTurf guy is coming the next day. I was glad that she didn't explain the full element of just how much work was involved before. I would have made up some excuse, you know, keto would have fit, oh, I can't do it, you know. But because you get a phone call, oh, we can come tomorrow and start the work, and it's like panic stations, oh my gosh, there's so much gardening to do. And John came and did the weeds before that. But the reason we had to weed is because even when you lay something new, if there's old roots or old weeds that blow over, they can still do harm to that new piece of garden that you're doing. It's the same with our lives. We can have weeds from the past. And if we don't uproot them, the seeds or the roots, you know, they can bear fruit in other ways. And this is what Jesus teaches about the commandments. He said, oh, you know, someone could say, well, you know, at least I've never murdered anyone. And Jesus would say, well, have you ever been angry? Well, yeah, of course. Well, that's where it begins. Anger turns into hatred. Hatred turns into murder. So as Christians, we mustn't be lax when we know we have certain things about our character that need nipping. In fact, not nipping at the bud, but the root has to come out. The root has to be torn up and pulled out. I'm going to try and not say any more than four finalies this morning. But Joseph goes on, as if he hasn't learned the first time, he said, oh, guess what, guys, I've had another dream. And they're like, oh, my, should we just kill him now? I mean, can you imagine when he told them the first dream, what would their faces have been like when he told them? Would they have gone, oh, that's wonderful. Joseph, you are so blessed. Thank you for sharing that dream that we're going to be bowing down to you. No, I would imagine the looks on their faces said to Joseph, shut thy mouth. But Joseph, he's naughty, needs to tell his brothers again, guess what? It gets worse for you lot. It's a cracking story. This is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Obviously, the sun represents Jacob. The moon represents Jacob's wives, Rachel, Leah, and their two maids. The 11 stars represents the 11 brothers. Joseph is the big star of it all. But Jacob ponders this dream in his heart because he sees or senses that God is at work in some way. God is at work in some way. Okay, in closing. Even though Joseph's life was full of promise, he had to learn that even a seed takes a while to grow. And though it has within its DNA everything it needs to reach its full potential, a seed takes as long as it's been programmed to take. I don't really do plants, so I'm not very knowledgeable about them, but I do know that when a child brings home something from school and they've put something in a pot and they go, look, Dad, look what I brought home from school, and it's just a bit of earth. I say, well, what is it? It's got a seed in it. Oh, really? Yeah, got to keep watering it, Dad. And then, you know, a few days later, you're surprised. I mean, the school isn't silly. They give them a seed that germinates pretty quickly. Straight away, you think, wow, you didn't see that under the surface. God's doing things in our lives under the surface. April, you know, you lived in the Philippines, haven't you? You've lived abroad. You've lived in, what other places have you lived in? In Dubai? Australia? Yeah? Now, you've got a seed of God's plan for your life inside of you. Years ago, you wouldn't have known that that's how it's going to germinate and develop. Who knows where you're going to be next? You don't know. The good thing is, God's got a design and a plan for all of us. We just have to water it. We mustn't alter it. We have to water it. If we alter it, we're in trouble. But if we water it, then we'll have God's will. Often we want to alter things when really we just water them through prayer and through reflection and humility. Pastor Russell Kelfer once said that some folk have become so enamoured with visions of spiritual grandeur that we think our kids, our employees and our neighbours ought to bow down spiritually and be impressed that they have the privilege of rubbing elbows with spiritual giants like us. Like Joseph's brothers, they are not at all impressed by our dreams. They are repulsed by our pride. The bottom line is love. Love knows how to keep its mouth closed. We don't boast about our good works. We give glory to God if we're able to reflect His work in our lives. So this part one, was the first mistake of Joseph, and one that God used powerfully to set in motion an incredible adventure that ultimately leads to the salvation of the Jewish people. God had to get Joseph out of Canaan. He had to get him into Egypt. He wouldn't have gone there by choice, so God had to orchestrate things. The amazing thing is, God used the hatred and the envy, and he used the things that were bad to bring about the eternal good. That should teach us something about our world that we live in. Sometimes God is able to use situations that are very grim and orchestrate things for his bigger picture. Some people say, oh, Trump, he's God's chosen man, this, that and the other. That doesn't mean that he's a righteous man at all. God speaks through a donkey in the Bible, so you know, we have to be careful who we say has God's approval. Jesus said it's by their fruit that we know whether someone is godly. Not by what they say, but the fruit of their life. Okay, well that's part one, the life of Joseph. If you want to read on more about that, so that you're a bit more clued up, carry on reading from Genesis chapter 37. And maybe next week we'll do this part two. The story gets really juicy and it gets brilliant. It's a really fabulous story. Have you enjoyed that?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay.